CliffCentral.com.
All right. It is Friday morning. We've got a really good show ahead for you because, how can I say that with confidence? Well, you've got Rob van Vuuren joining us. He, of course, is one of South Africa's most well-known funny people. He's a creative genius. He's also made all kinds of amazing TV. And he's an actor. He's a serious actor as well, which is always cool because I love talking to people who can do a bunch of different things well. I always say that horrible line. I hate this line. They call you a jack of all trades and a master of none, right? But once upon a time, and these are among the people who we still use the word genius when we attribute anything to them. Once upon a time, a Renaissance man was exactly that. Not a jack of all trades and a master of none, but a master of many things. You know, Leonardo da Vinci, he could paint, he could draw, he could sculpt, he could invent, he could write backwards. He was absolutely incredible at a bunch of things. He also designed buildings. He also did whatever he had to do to make a living, whether it was working for the French king or whether it was working for the Pope. And he ran a business, a school of other artists. So you can call Leonardo da Vinci a jack of all trades, but I don't think you call him a master of none. And a Renaissance man, or what's the other word that they use? A polymath. This is something to aspire to, not something to mock. I don't know when humans started to use that jack of all trades thing. But I love, look at Elon Musk, since he's always in the news and we're always talking about him. And I've got a comment here from Elon is God this morning. There seem to be a lot of connections being made today. This guy's, he's got, you know, all these different businesses and he's clearly interested in many different things. You can't call him a jack of all trades and master of none. Seems to me he's been fairly successful. Anyway, I like that that terminology of kind of Renaissance men, polymaths. So Elon is God says, do you think that these TikTok people would commit mass suicide if the US would ban TikTok? Now, that would be a really interesting social experiment. How far would a TikTok star go to stay on TikTok? Would they move to China? Would they really sacrifice their life in the U.S., for example? If the United States suddenly decided to ban TikTok, would that be the straw, the final straw that would break the camel's back and would make someone, some, you know, person in their 20s who lives in their parents' house and has a very cushy life, would it suddenly make them go, oh, no, I'm not doing this. I am moving immediately. I'm going to China because I need TikTok that badly. I wonder. That would be a fascinating thing to talk about. We can maybe get into that a little later on. Something I wanted to talk about, and I think Ben's making coffee. We got Rob van Vuuren coming up just now. Something I wanted to talk about this morning, and maybe you can help me answer this too. As you grow up, you kind of change your perspective on who you really look up to. And that's obviously happened for, you know, if you think about your own life. You know, the people you looked up to, the heroes that you had in your 20s, are not the heroes you have when you're in your 30s or your 40s. And I wonder how those have changed. I'd love to know if you have a very stark contrast between the kind of people that you idolized when you were 25 and the kind of people you might idolize 10 years later, 20 years later. Because I think we change our opinion. I was talking to someone yesterday, a very good friend of mine, and someone who I do respect enormously. He's very, very clever. He's always watching what's going on in the world, paying attention to the trends and, you know, all the important things that are happening. And I just wondered if, you know, this guy, sorry, I read a message, so I was distracted for a second. Where are you, Ben? I can't see you. It's like your camera's gone. Yeah, but your camera's gone dead. That's why I didn't know where you were.
That's weird. I can see me on the screen.
It
says here, you're in the show. Everyone can see and hear you.
No, we can't see you. It's just a black screen. Have you given away your soul to the devil?
Yeah, Black Lives Matter, Gareth.
Okay, do me a favor. Go out and come back in. There we go. And while he's doing that, just reset the link. Because he's sending me a message now. He's like, I'm in here, but I don't know why I'm not on the show. Okay, well, we'll try and get him back on. So who did you look up to in your 20s that you don't look up to anymore? Who have you replaced them with? That's bound to be all about your development, you know, your character as a human being. Have you got better? Have you got worse? Everybody thinks they're getting better, but maybe you haven't. Did you replace someone who was quite good with someone who was quite bad? Who do you look up to now, as opposed to the people that you looked up to when you, even when you were much younger than that, perhaps? Yeah, Twitter experience. You're giving Bill Gates an idea to thin out the herd. Great place to start. What are you talking about? The idea of TikTok being banned in the U.S. and then, well, it won't happen. But if it did happen, there's Ben. All right, we got you back.
All right.
So I asked this question earlier, but two things I want your opinion on. The first one is, and it was a comment from one of the listeners, Elon is God, said, if we banned TikTok in the U.S., do you think people would ever, they'd move to China? Or do you think mostly they'd just complain a lot and then find something new?
They would complain for a few days, eat junk food, and then just go on to whatever the next thing is that's going to take their time. You move to China, you don't, like, it's not the same thing. You move to China, firstly, they'll lock you up because they might suspect you smell like COVID. And then TikTok there, they don't want your noise. They don't want you dancing. No. Unless you're educating the kids and bettering the people, they don't want your TikTok.
Exactly.
You think someone with like purple hair and anxiety problems is going to be a hit in China?
No.
Whatever.
All right, so heroes. Who did you look up to in your 20s that you don't look up to anymore, and who have you replaced them with?
Well, I used to watch a lot of sports, obviously, but the weird thing was I never really had sporting heroes. I mean, obviously, we've spoken about this at length. You know, South Africa's hero is Gary Player, and he will forever be someone that everyone looks up to.
Yeah,
because
sure.
He's just achieved the most. You know, he's the biggest winner. He's the absolute biggest winner. It's just such a weird thing that because people always say, oh, but you've got to have heroes. I've never actually had heroes. I got people that I admire. It's a weird thing though, actually. I've never ever gone by, because I mean, I've met sports people, right? Which is the biggest mistake to ever make. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Because they can only be disappointed. And it's absolutely no slight on their part. It's just that we elevate them so much more. Same with celebrities, all celebrities. We elevate them so much more than they ever want to be elevated deep down. So when it comes to actually talking to them as people, they'll only ever disappoint themselves and you. So, you know, having heroes is a weird thing. Like,
yeah,
Gareth, I think I've just never had it because I've always just been too curious about finding out stuff by myself. Maybe it's the narcissist in me. Maybe I'm my own hero. I'm trying to be anyway.
Well, luckily for you, Kieran says he looks up to the both of us because we're degenerates. Okay, great. Thanks.
Nice.
Very nice, Kieran. Thank you. I looked up to Billy Joe. I looked up to Billy Joe Armstrong from Green Day, and I still do, says Ryan. Okay, well, some people stay. I don't think I have heroes either. You know, I mean, if you like football, then you have a football hero in inverted commas. If you like let's talk philosophers, then maybe your favorite philosopher is, I don't know, Immanuel Kant. But I have like different people. Immanuel Kant, Ben. Didn't you hear me properly? Immanuel Kant.
Sure. School must have been tough for that guy.
Ben is so unprofessional. Last week he was in a gown. This week he fucks off to get tea. Yeah, exactly. Good point, well put.
I was in the waiting room the whole time. It's the tech that failed you guys, not me.
Well, George agrees. Listen, George George agrees. George says, I'm with Ben. There are people who have parts of themselves or have achieved things I want to learn. But for me, hero means you want to be that person. If that's the case, then you have to take the bad as well. Yeah.
Yeah, George is always so smart with these things. And that's why I was going to ask. I mean, like, what is the purpose of a hero? As a kid, we have superheroes because we watch those things because they're going to save the world if the bad man comes.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you realize that no one's saving you from the bad man, as in like government, tax, all those actual real evils, then you realize you've got to be your own hero.
Well, that's also why I think a lot of very stupid people these days have watched superhero movies and they think that there are perfect people in the world. And then they go around complaining about history and they're like, oh, well, you know, George Washington, he may have founded the United States and he might have been their first president and only done one term, but he kept slaves, so we got to pull down every one of his statues. Like, he was going to be perfect in some way, you know. And I think that that's just such a childish way of looking at the world. And probably those are the same people who do actually have heroes and want to actually be those people. And usually they're not real people. They've got an idea of them in their heads. Because everyone's a little bit of bad and good,
yeah.
Right? Maybe that's also what happens.
Of course they are.
Maybe as you grow up, you start to see that some people have some very ugly characteristics that you used to just gloss over, and then you eventually can't anymore. I don't know. Immanuel Kant, there he comes again. He just keeps intervening in this conversation. Let's just have a look here. Jesus has always been my boo, says Lighthouse Barber. David Attenborough says Dud's best human ever.
He's definitely up there.
What would David Attenborough, like he's what, 96 or something years old? What would you have to discover about David Attenborough for you to be completely horrified and change your opinion that he's not a great human being? What could be said about him suddenly if it was revealed that he was, I don't know, a serial killer? Would that change your opinion about him?
Well, serial killing, yeah, look, the answer is always interfering with kids. If he's traveling the world doing nature programs while also diddling pygmy children, legacy ruined.
Yeah.
If he was out murdering people because of conservation rights, then he'd be like the Dexter of the natural world. Imagine David Attenborough going, I've been coming to these lands for 100 years. These fuckers keep polluting this river, so I've had to skin all of them. It would be like, okay. There goes Dave, doing the world's work.
Fine. They'd be very
forgiving. It would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
But if he's like, I've been coming to this forest for 20 years and these kids are fucking sexy, it'd be the worst thing. Absolute worst thing.
Yeah, I do think so. You're right. That would always just really blacken someone's name in the history books. It's like interfering with children. You're right.
It's the worst. We've always said this. This is maybe why we have some strange humor towards it, but it's the worst crime in the world.
Yeah.
It's just the worst thing to do as a human being. It means you are the lowest of low.
Yeah. You're bursting a lot of bubbles this morning, says Anne-Marie. Are we? Sorry. Carl was very funny earlier. You know, we were talking about developing your own app and the app to rule all apps, right? So he says, if I don't take the time to actually develop my own app, am I apathetic? Which I thought was pretty clever. Sometimes he's clever, sometimes he's not. All right. Let us welcome someone who I love having on the show and someone who's always good to see. Are you on your way, Ben? Cheers.
Yeah, I got it going.
All right.
Bye, Gareth. Have a lovely weekend. Bye, everybody.
No worries. Cheers, Ben. So I'm thrilled to have Rob van Vuren with us again. He, of course, is a comedic genius. He's also a brilliant actor and a really creative person, someone who's done incredible things. I first got to know about him from the most amazing show, which he was Twaki in. And I will admit right from the start, I loved every single thing that Corneille and Twaki did. I thought it was just absolutely brilliant. And I know some stuff, you know, ages really well when you look at it, and some stuff just looks horribly out of place. I still think that The Most Amazing Show would look hilarious today, just like it did in those days. But maybe he disagrees. Either way, he's also presented a bunch of TV shows. He's been on Strictly Come Dancing. He did The Crazy Games, directed a bunch of plays, which a lot of people don't know, and also co-hosted his first two seasons of SA's Got Talent. He has also done a bunch of really impressive acting. He's been in a couple of movies. He's also starred in a drama miniseries on SABC1 called The Kingdom, which, of course, was very successful. And he joined the main cast of the 2020 Netflix crime drama, which is called Queen Sono. And his new live comedy show is called Rob van Vuren Is Still Standing. Rob, you're not that old that you need to use pejorative language when you're referring to yourself. Of course you're still standing. Where else would you be? How are you, man?
Jeez, I'm good, Gareth. How are you?
Lekker. It's good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you too, man. I think after the last 2.5 years, I think any of us could be grateful to still be standing. It's been a rough ride.
Yeah, funny. We were talking about this with Robbie Collins just last week, and he was saying how many ups and downs everybody's been through. Whether you're in the entertainment business, which, you know, I'm saying using a general term like the entertainment business, but in your case, very specifically also comedy, it took a huge hit during this time. And I think everybody, whatever business you were in, unless you were selling PPE, you know, it was the worst time ever. Everybody was like, fuck, let's get back to normal. This is awful. And I think it's starting to creep back. Are you back to doing all the things you want to do full time?
Yes. I mean, it was very interesting for me, a very interesting time for me in many ways. Like live stuff was obviously the most heavily affected. I mean, we only went to full capacity of venues in at the end of June.
Yeah.
I was at the National Arts Festival, and like I think halfway through the festival was the first time we were allowed full capacity audiences, which is kind of crazy. So the live aspect of the industry has been completely decimated. It's coming back now, and it's people are hungry for it, and it's so great to be playing to actual human beings and not doing online comedy, which was hell. But what was interesting about it is it really helped my film career out, because the film industry was one of the first kind of cogs of the entertainment industry to
switch back on,
to get up and running again and to adapt to the protocols. And in the past, I'd always kind of struggled to get my film career going, and I worried that maybe it was just because I was cuck on camera. But it turns out I wasn't cuck. I was just unavailable.
No, you were not cuck at all. In fact, I've got a very nice compliment for you right up front here. I mean, it's, you know, I always do this to make the guests feel great, but it's not me. It's one of our listeners. Carla says, Rob, your performance in Lüdick along with Arnold Fosler blew my mind. Well done, and thank you for all the excellent entertainment. You see, this is something I said before you came on this morning, and I want to hear your take on it. There are two schools of thought on this. Either you're denigrated by certain people by them using this term jack of all trades and master of none, which I hate. I mean, I'll be clear about my preference in this respect. And then there are those people who say, well, you want to be good at as many things as possible. And the jack of all trades thing is very dismissive, because you could be a master of many things, and you clearly are. I mean, you can be a very serious actor, which requires a totally different skill set in some ways to the kind of skill set that you have when you stand up comedy. When you're writing things, when you're directing things, these are all very, very different things. You do all of them well. And they used to call that a polymath or a Renaissance man. And whether it's, you know, painting, sculpting, drawing, writing, inventing, which was like a Leonardo da Vinci's, you know, box of skills. In your case, you've got directing, acting, performing, writing, and all of those things are very, very different. And you're bloody good at all of them. So how do you feel when people say, oh, well, you know, Rob's a... Because I'm sure there are people who've said that. Maybe people who are jealous that they can't do all those things. They've only got the one. They're a one-trick pony, to use another pejorative. But how do you feel about that? Do you think it's important in one life to try and cover as much ground as you can so that your life really has meaning and you explore all the different things? You might find something totally outside of your current environment that really inspires you, that fills up a huge gap in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the keys to a fulfilling and happy existence is curiosity, you know. And if you're truly curious, you're going to investigate and you're going to learn as much as you possibly can with your limited time here. And if you're a good learner and you're dedicated, you're going to become good at the things that you learn. And I don't think you need to set a limitation on that. That quote is also, it's so often misquoted because it's not the full quote. The original quote is, ends with, is what a jack of all trades
and a master of none.
And a master of none is oftentimes better than a master of one.
Aha. Uh-huh. Correct.
That's,
no, you're right.
That's the actual full quote. And I think that stands true. If you're the kind of person who approaches everything with like a dedicated curiosity and a passion, you're going to become better at many things than a person who isn't interested and curious is at that one thing that they claim to be a master of.
Yes, but also, you don't be afraid of failure. Like this, we keep being told this, but people don't put this into their own world, you know? So you might want to try your hand at, and I'm not saying you should do this with brain surgery, but if you, for example, think that it might be fun to paint and you've never painted before, give it a go. What's the worst that can happen is you paint a shit painting and everyone laughs and you move on. At least you've tried it. Imagine getting to the end of your life and going, oh, I really wanted to mix poultices like an apothecary from the 1400s. And I never got to do that. And now I'm at the end of my life. Maybe that was your thing. You could have been like an old school apothecary. God alone knows there might be a demand for something like that. But you never did it. So you never got to fulfill your life. You die unhappy. How awful would that be?
Yeah, I think failure, we've got such a fear of failure in society, and it's so vitally important to have any kind of success. You have to fail. It's the vital ingredient to success. And I'm very grateful for that lesson, especially in stand-up comedy, because failure is unavoidable. There is no way you fly through it. So
I love this.
And it's the bad gigs. It's the failures where you learn stuff. You know,
I mean, here's someone who says Rob's best performance was in Knysna during load shedding, a storm, but we filled up a venue and used phones for lighting. He performed for 2 hours. What a legend, dude! That's incredible.
I remember that show. That was a fun show. That was good. Thank you.
Wow. All right.
What I wanted to say, Gareth, is I also don't want to I do lots of different things, but I do think there's a common thread through them.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it all comes down to storytelling and a love for storytelling. So I certainly have followed a particular path in terms of what is my passion, what I am good at. But what I've found is that within that path, if you kind of could distill it to its most basic form, it can go into so many different directions. So, you know, if I'm working as a director or a writer or a performer, as a stand-up, as an actor, it's still coming out from that basic kind of kernel of passion, which is storytelling.
I love that. I just feel it's been watered down so horribly by people in the media and business world, because everyone thinks that storytelling is something that they have the ability to do. Now, you undoubtedly have that ability. There are a few people who I just love to listen to and watch, and they could tell me any story. They could tell me the most boring story ever, and I'd be captivated. But then you get these, you know, ad agencies and these people in business and people in the media, and they're like, we have a story to tell you. And then you watch or listen to their story and you're like, oh my God, I'll never, that's an hour of my life I'll never get back. And it was all to sell me this, this cough medicine. And you feel like you've been robbed. I think that storytelling, while every human has the ability to tell stories, the people who really tell them well, like you, are like real diamonds, dude. And they're not easy to find. And everybody now, because we're all content creators. No, because we're all I'm not just blowing smoke up your ass, although that's part of it. Everyone now is a content creator, so they all assume that automatically they're also storytellers. And they're not.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. I think we have like unlimited access to an audience all the time. Mm. So yeah, you do tend to think that you're performing all the time, and that
my favorite is you know, someone who has like 50 followers on Instagram, and they're like, oh, I just want to let my fans know I'll be taking this week off of social media. And I think, oh, well, thank fuck you told me that, because now how am I going to fill up my podcast playlist without you there? It's going to be just hell.
We'll alert the UN. Thank you very much.
All right, so what's this latest show? Tell me about that.
Kala mentioned Ludic on Netflix, which I just wanted to say thank you so much, Kala, for watching it and for the support. That was a huge deal for me. It was Netflix's first Afrikaans original. A crime drama with Arnold Forstner. To get to perform on screen alongside Arnold and to get to hang with him and spend time with him and listen to his stories and have a few drinks after a day of shooting was an experience I will cherish for the rest of my life. It was absolutely amazing. But the story of getting that part for me was quite incredible, because it was during lockdown I started getting requests for a self-tape through for an Afrikaans drama series, mm-hmm. which I never get. I very rarely get to work in drama because people perceive me as a comedian. And in Afrikaans, which I don't get to work in as well. And I was really intrigued by it. I sent through the self-tapes. Then I got a request to say they really love you for that.
I want to ask you about that. How does that actually work? Do you have someone filming it for you, or you just put a camera on? No. Because it must be so awkward to record these tapes. Someone posted something yesterday. She's an actress, I know. She's been a guest on the show once or twice. She was asked to do like a reaction video of like a fight going on. So she was sitting there going... And she said she felt so stupid doing it, and it looked crazy because without the context, and you know, an actor has to be able to imagine the stuff first. So that
we get to do the weirdest things in those things. It can be super, super awkward. I remember once helping out with an audition for a movie called Shark Attack 2, where we had a bunch of. Woman come in to audition for the lead sister, and the scene that they had to play out was the two sisters were windsurfing, and one of them gets knocked by a shark and then eaten by the shark. So that's the scene they have to play out in this tiny little studio, standing there miming windsurfing and then getting eaten by a shark. So end up doing really, really bizarre things. But that's like normally in a studio. During lockdown, we had to do it ourselves. So yeah, I've done some on my own, which are really not great. But the secret to my self-tape success is actually Lo Fenta, a.k.a. Cornet from The Most Absolutely. Amazing Show, who lives like across the valley from me in Clovelly. And I go over and we set it up in his studio, and he films it for me, and he plays all the other characters. He laughs at me all the time, even when I'm doing dramatic stuff. But I have a good hit rate when I do it with love.
You know how many of us would pay money just to see that going on, that you being filmed by him and him reacting to you? Because I wouldn't be able to keep it.
Like
face.
I'm crying, and he's like laughing his ass off at me.
Listen.
But I mean, I got that part. So I got a request to do another self-tape for this character called Sways, who I didn't even know. I had no context for the whole show. I didn't know what it was. It was this very dramatic scene where he's about to relapse. He's been clean for like 2 years, and he phones AA and breaks out crying. So I go do this self-tape at Lowe's house, nail it, even though Lowe's laughing at me. And then I send it through and I get the part. And then I read this script, and it's this 6 episodes of just like the coolest, grittiest, edgy Afrikaans, South African crime drama. And the part that I'm playing is like number 2 next to Arnold Forsler. It's this incredible dramatic arc. I remember reading through it, and as I finished the 6th script, I read through the night. I just like closed my iPad and started crying. I was just like, oh my God, I've been waiting my whole life for a part like this. So the opportunity was huge for me, and I grabbed it with both hands. I had an absolute
what happens,
joy doing it.
Just explain to those of us who've never been in the world of serious acting, especially film, because we all have an idea of what happens, you know, auditions and all that stuff, but you just explained the self-tape thing. Now, who are the people who watch that tape, and what are they actually looking for? Because it seems like a little bit unnecessary. Like, surely if you just sit in the room with the guy, what are they looking for in a tape like that? Because how much can possibly come through when it's you sitting there in this room and, you know, Lowe is busy filming you, and you're trying to, show depth of... I don't know, your depth of ability to get into, to inhabit this character. Like, well, how does it work for the person who's receiving this tape? What are they looking for?
I guess, you know, the people who are receiving it, is normally there'll be a casting director, but it's ultimately going through to the director and the producers. And they will have quite a specific thing in mind in terms of what they're looking for that character. That'll because incorporate age and
the brilliant producers like Harvey Weinstein, he would actually have you come into his room while he was in his robe, and that was how he cast his movies. So I'm just trying to see how the tape works. It doesn't make sense to me.
How did you know that's how I got the part?
No, well, I mean,
my secret's out.
Oh God, I think about old Hollywood, and how it must have worked then, because it was obviously just a way for these creepy producers back in like the early days, the '50s, the '60s. You know, these guys must have just like lined up all the prettiest girls in town, and they just come in for casting, and they met them, then they dated them, and it was all perfectly okay. And then somewhere we decided, quite rightly, No, that's not on anymore. And then eventually we got to a point where the poor casting director is receiving a tape from you that's been filmed by Lo. It's just not sexy at all.
Yeah. Yeah, no, look, we still go in studio sometimes, and that's always better when you can feel the person's energy in the room. But ultimately, they're looking for someone who can, if it's a dramatic part and there's a particularly big dramatic moment, can that person actually do it? Can they get there under pressure? Because on a film set, you don't have a lot of time. You've got to go quickly. You're shooting out a sequence all the time. I mean, the first scene that I shot on Lüdeck was, I arrived that morning. We like raced around and I got into costume, doing different layers of makeup for me for the torture scenes that I experienced. And then
sure.
The first scene is like next to a graveyard. After a, like 3 day coke bender and alcohol binge, after having been tortured and then breaking down at my dead wife's grave, like that's literally the first thing
that's heavy.
I shot.
What a start!
On Lüdeck, yeah, yeah. So they got to be confident that the person can go there when you need them to.
And of course, another thing about this, which those of us like me who don't know about the film business don't get, is that none of it is chronological. Like they expect your character. You're the character at the end of the thing, sometimes at the beginning. So you haven't even gone through all of the stuff that you should go through to get to the point where you're this broken person, maybe right at the end, or you've been saved, yeah, or whatever it is. And they start.
Yeah, so that's all about preparation. You know, it's like reading the script really carefully and plotting out your journey and where you would be emotionally and trying to kind of contextualize that for yourself each scene. So I did this whole little book where I was doing the different scenes and kind of going, okay, this is what's happened to him, this is what's going to happen to him, and then also just being aware of when I would be shooting those scenes so that when I came into it wasn't kind of cold, because when they assemble it, it's got to make sense, it's got to feel like you are okay on a particular journey. So it was challenging, but such a great challenge. I loved it.
So you still haven't told me what your stand-up show is about, but we'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
No, we'll get there now. While we're on this, because I can hear you really, you're loving this, and doing this film stuff is really, like, this is your new thing, and you're clearly very good at it, and you enjoy it and all that stuff. Has it got to the point, though, where you look around and you go, okay, this is South Africa. Our opportunities here are much more limited in that business. There are not as many things going on for a dramatic actor, or even if you wanted to do comedy, that too. You've done most of the things you can do here. Has it started to get to that point where people are saying to you, don't you want to go overseas? Or have you thought to yourself, I want to get out of here and I want to go and try my hand at, you know, Los Angeles or New York, or God forbid, you know, something like Bollywood or Nollywood, if that was more your thing. But people do think that way because, largely, Rob, from the outside, it looks like you've conquered a lot of this stuff already. Are you feeling a bit hemmed in?
That's an interesting question. I think in South Africa there was definitely more of a ceiling, you know, in the past and even just in the recent history, the last 5 to 10 years, than there is now. And that's been a question that people have posed to me throughout my career. I never went that way because I was so excited about what I could do here and it was home, and that I loved the scene. I loved the theater scene, and that's where I kind of got into it. But I've gotten to the point now where if I were to go overseas, I'd have to start almost from scratch. I'd bring my experience with me, and I'd bring a certain reputation, but it would mean nothing in the States or in the UK to a certain degree. And there's now we're at the place where there's so much more stuff being shot here, and with streaming and so many different channels, I've actually got more of an opportunity to go global staying here, I think, than I would if I went there.
Makes perfect
sense. That for me is kind of the what I'm hoping to do is to keep working here, but to be able to export globally, whether that's with live stuff and touring shows, which I've, you know, I've done to a certain degree, doing festivals, doing Edinburgh, Amsterdam, things like that, but then always coming back home. And I think with film stuff, I get the sense that that's kind of the trajectory I'm hoping to do, is to do more stuff that exports globally and that shoots here that is for a global audience. You know, I did a short scene on the Mauritanian where I got to share the screen with Jodie Foster.
Jesus, wow.
You know, and I don't think I would have had that opportunity if I'd been in the States, because the pool of competition is so much bigger. Whereas I've established myself here, so when I walk into a casting studio here, I've actually got a better opportunity. And I mean, like, it wasn't a huge part, but it was Jodie fucking Foster, dude.
Absolutely. And if you were in LA and Jodie Foster was your next door neighbor and she had to film your self tape, it wouldn't be nearly as good as if you did it with Lowe, you know? So that makes sense. Makes perfect sense. All right. So just to go back to my obsession, which I can only give you all the credit or blame for. Courtney and Twaki. So Michael lives in, I think, in Switzerland, and he says, I forced my German girlfriend, forced her to watch Courtney and Twaki, and she didn't get it at all. But The Toilet of Truth, she thinks, is the best and the most honest material ever. The Toilet of Truth. Fuck, that's great. That is so great. Have you put them away, Courtney and Twaki? You finished with them?
No, we actually did shows this year. They kind of got resurrected during lockdown because we were desperate.
You only needed each other to make that work, right? So if you and he were together in a room, then Courtney and Twaki are there. You don't need other people. You don't need fancy.
Dude,
production.
In the beginning, the first couple of shows, we weren't even in the same room.
Yes.
We did full shows like this, like we are now, and we figured out all the little tricks of the most fascinating process of going, okay, these are the limitations of the medium. How do we make it like a compelling double act comedy show for an hour with this? So we like figured out things like the orientation of the camera. So if we'd like be able to talk to each other like that, as if we were in the same room, like I'm talking to you now. We did like a little puppet show with our Courtney and Twaki figurines, which we would pass to each other through the camera, and then he would pick it up. It was so much fun. And then because we had so much fun, we decided to do some live shows when the restrictions were lifted. And it was amazing. It was we had so much fun, but the audience as well, it had the same kind of hysteria that our live shows created back in, in the early 2000s. It had that same kind of madness to it, which was rad. It was really, really fun.
Okay, so Annette's asking what a lot of people want to know. Where can I watch all of this? Is there a whole channel on YouTube, or have people just lifted stuff
there is,
without your
there
permission?
There is some stuff on YouTube. There is. There's the famous How to Make Sex on Natalie Portman sketch.
All right, okay. Let's look for it. Okay. But it's not – are these people who've lifted this stuff off of you guys, or is it your official channel that you've put together?
It's stuff that we – it was our channel that we were making a while ago, but then we lost the login details and the password, so
we're art so we imitates
you can
life.
See it, it's there.
Art imitating
we've got
life.
A,
that's beautiful.
We've got an Instagram page as well, and if you follow myself on Instagram, I'll update stuff. So we are doing live shows, which I think we'll do some more of. We put it there.
All right.
But the stuff on film, like I've got some of the DVDs of the second season of the TV show, but otherwise it's quite scarce, actually.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to find. I'm just glad that there is some, so I'll go and look for it after the show. All right, let's talk about your stand-up show, because this is what's new and this is what you're up to at the moment. And it's called Rob Van Vuren Still Standing. So how do you choose material for this? And listen, there's such a glut of stuff out there at the moment. People are all desperate to fill up venues. I'm sure you don't have any problem doing that. But what are you going to be talking about? Like, what's the gist of it? I know you probably hate it because it's like saying, well, tell me about yourself in five lines. You know, it's like that.
No, it's actually, I think it's pretty on topic for some of the things that you've been talking about, especially the conversation you were having about heroes. Mm. So first of all, the show is very much a kind of a personal retrospective of all the traumatic things that have happened to me over the last 2.5 years. I mean, global pandemic notwithstanding. I mean, that's the kind of basic context from which we're all coming from. You know, I got separated at the end of 2020, the end of a really incredible marriage with someone that I love deeply. We went through a very intense process of conscious uncoupling to retain our friendship and retain the kind of our family integrity, which is an incredible process.
Do you have kids?
Yes, we have an 11-year-old. We also managed to get hijacked during lockdown in Kugulethu when there was a lifting of restrictions, and we went through, myself and Danny went through to Googs to do a reading of our children's book do a book giveaway. And we decided it would be a good idea to take our daughter with us.
Oh, man.
Because we are idiots. And then we ended up being hijacked, which was traumatic and terrifying. I went to a gig where someone was literally actually murdered.
Jesus.
I went to, and I think probably the most traumatic of all, I did online comedy while my mother knitted in bed next to me.
My God.
So it's a very personal account of those experiences, but don't get me wrong, it's funny. It's really, really funny. I found a way to process all of that trauma, and it's been really, really cathartic and beautiful. I did ayahuasca. That helped
nice.
As well.
Okay, yeah.
Now I'm not sure this is actually happening.
Yeah, pull that face again, because that's exactly what it is.
I'm melting!
Did you have, like, because there's some people I know who've done this, and they say, oh, no, it's changed my whole appreciation of life, and I know all living things are connected and all of this stuff. Or was it, you know, some kind of, okay, well, that was an interesting realization or an interesting insight? Or did it just feel like a fun experience? What are the levels of depth?
It was a super, super intense, super, super intense experience. I did two ceremonies. Yeah. The first ceremony, I was two hours of bliss followed by 4 hours of terror upon terror.
Really?
Incredibly traumatic and intense, but very, very, very cathartic and very healing. In a way that I didn't expect, and that was incredibly helpful for me. I came away with it ultimately just with an enormous amount of compassion for myself and for people close to me and for just people in general, which I found very, very helpful for my own healing. I will say, though, that I wouldn't recommend it as
It's not a recreational.
Something to do.
Yeah, it's not a recreational.
It's not a recreational.
This is not something you do to get high with your friends. This is like a proper.
It's proper deep trauma release. And if you're going to do it, if you are going to do it, make sure you're doing it with the right people, and also support yourself in your life around that. Like, make sure that you've got therapy, that you have a therapist set up, and that you're going to therapy regularly. Make sure that you're doing the kinds of self-care things that keep you grounded and help you integrate. And it's a big thing. I wouldn't recommend it, but you have to come to my show to hear me talk more about that experience.
Okay.
Getting back to the show, that's one of the things I cover. So it's all these like really traumatic things, but in a, in a way that's been really cathartic, and that people have responded to and related to. But the kernel of the show really came when, and this is relating to the hero conversation, came a couple of years ago. I was going through a depression that I did not realize I was experiencing at the time. And I was doing a gig where there was a motivational speaker speaking. And when I saw this motivational speaker speak, I immediately thought to myself, oh, now I really want to kill myself. Because before, I didn't know I was depressed. Now I knew how depressed I was and why. And I just remember, you know, it's one of those motivational, you know, the kind of person who feels like compelled to paddle to Madagascar and back in a boat made out of wet wipes.
We all know.
Just like a tea strainer for an oar.
And they're so optimistic and positive, I know it's meant to make you feel good, but it can sometimes be like, oh, Jesus.
It's also like it's these people who are putting themselves willfully under these really strenuous circumstances, which is really like a 2.5 year adventure holiday to come back and then get paid enormous amounts of money on the corporate speaker tour to tell us how cuck our lives are because we didn't do the mad cuck that they did.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, and it was weird because it was at an AGM for a group of farmers in the Robertson area. And I remember thinking, I just can't relate to the story this guy's telling. And then I'm looking at the farmers and going, they're thinking the same thing. I mean, these are people who are getting up every day before sunrise. They've got one of the toughest jobs on the planet. Mm. And he has a guy who's, you know, run across the Antarctic. It's like, it doesn't make any sense to me. It's like, I couldn't relate to that as a hero. And I thought to myself, like, well, who are my heroes? Who do I really look up to? And then I think lockdown in a way and the pandemic illustrated it so beautifully because I realized it was just normal people, mm-hmm. normal everyday people, you know, essential service kind of illustrated that, like nurses, teachers, doctors, the teller at the Checkers, you know, normal people who are surviving this chaos and this terrifying existence. So that for me, those are the true heroes. It's like just people, man. Normal people who get up every day and don't be a dick and manage to get through the day with love.
Well, listen, I am thrilled that you are back on stage doing some stand-up. We will all be there to watch it. Rob Van Vieren is still standing. You can get all the details on cliffcentral.com.
Yes. It's on the 20th and the 20th to the 22nd of October. I'm doing three shows at the Corpus Theatre, and we are filming it for my hour-long special, which I'm excited about. And Gareth, you must catch me on Comedy Central.
Yes.
Where I talk about a lot about these things as well. It's on, what is it on? Channel 122, Tuesdays and Sundays at 10, Comedy Central Live. Savannah and Comedy Central have been taking comedy back to the communities, and it's been amazing. It was an amazing initiative and experience. We talk a lot about mental health, and it's been a great way to get back on stage and in front of South Africans. And they've got an incredible lineup in Comedy Central as well. So catch that Tuesdays and Sundays. But come to my show. Rob Van Vieren is still standing, Corpus Theatre, and also somewhere near you.
Awesome.
I'm probably going to take it on tour.
Good man. Nice to see you, dude, and thank you so much for all the amazing work you do keeping the rest of us sane and smiling.
Thank you, Gareth. I love you.
Cheers, bro. Bye-bye. There we go. Rob Van Vieren, everybody, which brings me to my favorite part of a Friday, which is when George joins us, because it truly means the weekend is upon us. George Meany, how the hell are you?
Hey, Gareth Cliff. I hurt my back last night. I mean, I don't complain very often, but, you know,
are you in agony, George? Are you sitting there right now going, wincing every time you move?
It's something like that. Yes. I literally, every time I turned in the night, I woke up. But it's my own fault. I did some gym last night, and you know the exercise bent over rowing, where you bend over the bar and... And somehow that exercise just got to my back. So I'm hoping it's muscular and it's nothing worse. But so I'll give it a day or two and just give me an excuse to, you know, be on the couch,
George,
and I guess.
You don't realize what you got till it's gone. You're having a perfectly busy, normal life, and you're doing all the usual things, and you're an extremely busy person. You have lots of responsibilities, and you do cool things, and then suddenly you do this stupid exercise, and like everything is fucked, and all you can think about is your back.
Exactly. Oh. I walked to the kettle this morning to make coffee, and I'm like, jeez. I'm like, I feel like a question mark. You know, I was literally bent over.
Shame, it George.
Was,
yeah. It's fucking horrible.
It comes upon you when you don't know it.
I have total sympathy with you. It's like these people who suddenly they wake up and they've got sciatica, and then basically every moment of every day, they're just, whether they like it or not, they're enjoined in this pain that they cannot stop thinking about. It's like part of what's going on then for them for months sometimes. I hope yours is resolved fairly quickly. Go and see someone ASAP.
I think if it's still sore by lunchtime, I'll go and maybe have an X-ray. I think it feels muscular.
Just do it. Go and do it. Get someone. Get a professional to massage it out, or get a doctor to look at it. Whatever. You just get it fixed and get medication as well. You don't need to be in pain. So George, what do we got on the agenda this morning?
So first story, Gareth, is a story of a bear. This is obviously in the United States, and we've spoken about animals getting into cars before, but this bear decided to get into a double cab Bucky, and you can see the bear actually knows how to open the door. I mean, this is a video, and I just took screenshots out of the video, but the bear actually walks up to the car, knows where the handle is, pulls the handle, opens the door. And then this lady, they're driving past, and she's filming from the passenger seat of the car that's driving past, decides to jump out while she's filming. You can see the phone in her hand while she's filming to try and chase the bear. It's like, nothing will escape TikTok.
But George, listen, first of all, we don't have anything like a bear in South Africa, so we don't know how these animals behave. And bears are, first of all, they're really dangerous. I mean, especially the big ones, the grizzlies and the big brown bears and those ones. These things are not, and they're huge. They are, that's a little one by comparison, that bear. But some of these bears are enormous. The fact that they're clever enough to open a car door, leave it alone. It's not your car. Get the hell away. Do not irritate the bear. It's like these Canadians who they get in the way of a moose. Have you ever seen how big a moose is?
Moose? Jesus. I think a moose is probably, its back is as tall as our head. No, those things are big. Right. They're huge. But what's fascinating for me is that this lady climbs out of the car and she is fixated on filming this thing. So now your attention's partly on what you're filming.
Yeah.
You know, in a dangerous situation.
And what if there's another bear? What if there's another one in the bushes? It's like, you know,
the mother.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. That's the baby one. And you think, oh, that's a big bear. Let me film it. And then the mom comes out of the bushes and tries to eat you. Not good. Not good. Just quickly, George, Carl says it's not, of course, Carl's a doctor. It's not your muscle. You don't need an X-ray. Go to the physio. Literally got the same injury, the same exercise this week. You held your breath in when you did that. Now, when you did that row. There we go. That's what he's saying.
Oh, held my breath. Thank you, Carl. That is freaking amazing. I'm definitely now going to go and get that sorted out. Thank you.
Good.
So next story is, can you use Coke? Remember about a week or two ago, we spoke about opening a car door with a tennis ball and said that it's a load of bollocks. You can't open a car door with a tennis ball.
Yes.
Another thing now, this time you can use Coke to remove rust from a car. Now, you know, everybody knows how rust works. It's just oxidization, and that's how the metal reacts and then creates rust. Coca-Cola, apparently, I mean, I didn't know this until I read the story, contains a phosphoric acid as well as citric acid, and can remove stains as well as help remove rust from a car.
Well, George, interestingly enough, we had some wet tar put on the roads in our neighborhood, and there was a notice sent out on our WhatsApp group. So I've just had to scroll to find this. Someone said, I got damage to my vehicle, and I'm trying to figure out how to get the tar off of my paint on my car without damaging the car further. And listen to these. So someone in the neighborhood said, "Fear af met bikkie kook olie," so cooking oil. And then someone else said, boter werk ook. So clearly there's a lot of old wives' tales here that are very handy with cars. You say Coca-Cola for removing the rust. My neighbors say that both cooking oil and butter will remove tar from a car.
I did not know that. Tar is a very difficult thing to get off. That stuff is sticky. How do you think the black stuff stays on the road?
Yep. Correct. And in the heat that we're going through at the moment, it's probably not the best idea to put new fresh tar down.
Yep. Good point. Good point, because that tar is going to take longer to dry probably. And then I don't know if you are aware, I wasn't aware, that Lamborghini makes honey.
Please. What? Talk about extending your brand into places that it doesn't belong. Or, you know, what do they call it? Diversifying your brand. They make honey. Actual honey bees.
Actual honey. Now, the story behind the honey is that they had this big property, or have this big property, that that the offices and, you know, I don't know if there's assembly plants on it, but they had all this a lot of space, so they decided to put up what, you know, a honeybee thing is called an aviary or something,
apiary,
and apiary, yes. And apparently they produce 430 kilograms of honey per year in this with 600,000 bees. And they bottle it. And it's sold in their shop at the premises. If you want to go and visit Lamborghini, you can buy Lamborghini honey.
Well, it's a good one, because also we apparently bees are endangered, and if honeybees can be looked after by Lamborghini, I don't really care who looks after them, but if Lamborghini are doing their bit, that's good. I'm all in favor. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I'm all in favor, but you know, it's a stretch for a brand extension for me. But I think the story behind how it came about is not a bad one.
You know, Ferrari, I mean, they sell towels and bedding and all kinds of crap, and people buy that. So yeah. I mean, you showed us an office the other day, someone's home office, yes, that was entirely kitted out for Ferrari. So you know what?
Exactly.
Good for Lamborghini. At least they're doing something that's useful here.
And then very finally, this one I'm excited about, Gareth, because I've been saying this for a long time. I'm no car maker expert, but I've driven cars my entire adult life, probably like you have. And the voice assistants inside cars, and in fact, the mapping systems inside cars, are absolutely shit.
Really?
All of them.
You don't like
are
them?
As bad as each other.
But compared to what? Like compared to Waze?
Well, compared to Google Maps or those mapping softwares, or compared to Google Home or Alexa.
Right.
So BMW has now realized this, and they are partnering with Amazon to build Alexa into Alexa, stop. To build Alexa into their voice assistant in the car.
Yeah, you know what? This is clever, because you got to stick to your knitting. Why?
Yes.
Why would you, if you're a car manufacturer, why would you get involved in trying to make navigational software or voice-activated software? It's not your area of expertise. You're going to spend a huge amount on research and development. You won't end up with as good a product as the guys who do that for a living.
Exactly.
So just
exactly.
Incorporate. So I'm
behind BMW. Good. I think they're doing the right thing. You know, building. I'm not going to say her name because she's going to answer me.
Yeah, exactly. Hey Alexa, sing me a song. Listen to this. See what happens. Nobody likes me. Everybody hates me. All right, shut up, Alexa. Alexa, shut up. There we go. All right, there we go. Good morning, everybody. I hope you've had an excellent day, and I hope that that little song that my, what do you call it? A digital secretary?
Voice assistant.
That we got for you this morning. Nobody loves me. Everybody hates me. I'm going to eat some worms. That was what was sung, in case you couldn't hear it properly. We will see you on Monday. George, I hope your back gets better. I will not be here next week, but the team will be able to look after you from Monday to Friday. It's going to be a full schedule of stuff, and George will be back with the Auto Trader podcast on Monday too. Don't miss that. Have a good weekend, everyone. Cheers. Bye-bye.
cliffcentral.com.